Well, hi, everyone. It's Gary and John doing another campfire conversation with all of you. And we have Mark Wagger on with us. And so as you know from the emails, I sent a previous email about a direction that John and I wanted to explore, about how do you really walk out, your calling in the second half or the last third or the last fourth of your life. But then we heard that Mark was available, and we wanted to do this with Mark. So this really does, in many ways, play out in that general topic that we're still going to explore. But as you may have heard, if you were on with us last week, and John and Sam and I were sharing the things that God spoke or revealed to us or stirred in our hearts through the base camp gathering, we all mentioned Mark's session that he did on having a dream, vision, and fighting through the fear to get to that. It really impacted everyone. Undoubtedly, it is a topic that is relevant to everyone. So we wanted to get Mark back on the phone and really just conversationally explore this a little more, because we didn't have time at the base camp gathering to really ask questions. It wasn't designed for that, but we thought this would be great to do now. And just before I ask Mark a question and have him start, I put a link in the email that went out that you all saw for a video of his session. And it's right above all of the call information for this call right now. So you can click on that, and as I said, that and Brad Weber, thank you so much for videotaping those and doing the editing work and then the posting work to Dropbox. But as I have said, that Brad reminded me, if you stream it from Dropbox, it will only stream for 15 minutes. If you want to watch the entire session, which I believe is 40 minutes long, I think I saw that on the time code, you need to download it onto your computer to watch it. But I encourage you to do that. It's really good. So Mark, if you can, give us in just 2 or 3 minutes a synopsis of what it was you were telling us, stirring us about, giving us a vision for in your session.
All right. Well, all of this was birthed out of an experience I had with my wife that sort of brought all this to mind, which is, for those of you guys that weren't there, I had been driving home with my wife from a trip, a time away that we had done. And my wife said, "Hey, let's do a little dreaming. I just want you to, you know, tell me your dreams." And I actually couldn't do it. I wanted to do it, but I just couldn't do it. I felt like, oh my gosh, I don't even know if I've ever dreamed anything in my whole life. And so I tried to recall some things about the calling retreats and things I know to be true, and sort of picking through that, the things I love, the things I don't love, the words that come to me that are true about me, and that helped me get a little closer, but honestly, I couldn't do it, and so I had my wife. I said, "Why don't you go ahead and start?" And so she starts dreaming, and she just rattles stuff off. She's telling me about where she wants to live, what she wants to do, who she wants there, what kind of land she wants. She wants this certain house. She wants to raise organic beef, and they have this little mini farm, and I mean, this whole thing just pours out, and it was like this amazing, beautiful thing. And the more she talks about it, the more I start thinking, oh my gosh, like, she wants a farm. Who's going to weed the garden? Who's going to till the garden? I bet it's going to be me. Like, who's going to go out every day and, you know, check on the cow or whatever? I mean, I start taking her dream and dismantling it piece by piece. And so this whole talk really just was birthed out of that, out of this idea of, like, we have dreams coming around us, you know, probably all the time that we're not even aware of. But when somebody shares a dream, and I just completely became practical, like, this has to be a game plan. We have to figure out how to do it. It overwhelmed me. And so I basically crushed her dream by trying to, you know, we're never going to be able to afford this. How are you even going to do that? So there was so many what ifs, negative what ifs, that I had to start facing, like, what was behind that? And it's fear. It was all fear. And so this idea of talking about dreams and what fear does to dreams and how it looks so practical, you know, I'm saying like, oh, I'm making these practical decisions like we can't afford that or we're never going to be able to do this, but it was not practical. It was all fear. And so, so linking those two things together in this talk was about seeing a dream, seeing what I had done to the dream, realizing it was fear, and then trying to say like, okay, how do I move through this? How do I do this? How do I dream and move through fear toward my dreams instead of letting fear just cut them all off at the pass?
The end. Well, you know, oh no, that's not the end. But you know what's amazing is that story. Honestly, I could have put in my wife's name with me and a few different details. Exactly. And I've done it to her so many times that she's almost afraid to talk about dreams with me. And I've talked to other guys and they've said the same thing. I don't know if guys have a particular fear of dreams. And I just think that men do this to their wives all the time. But man, I related to that. I just went to the how could we possibly do this, and so just a vulnerable moment for a moment. Years and years ago, many years ago, Brent Curtis, when he was alive, went to him for counseling, and I was just talking about this area where Lee and I continually get in arguments over, and it's over finances. That's a new one for men and women. And then it was also kind of over dreams. And I just remember he said to me, he said, Gary, don't you trust Lee? Don't you trust her enough that you would allow her just to dream of things and know she's not going to do something that would hurt you and the family? And he really nailed me because he just got me right there that my heart, that I was so protective of, you know, don't help me to fail in anything. I'm already failing or something. But it really hit in the area of dreaming, and it's
don't you feel like there's a
fear.
Yeah, it does, and I wonder if there's a part of that so that like maybe it's maybe it's a man thing. I don't know. I'd really love to hear from somebody in the Secret Garden side to know, is this happened to them too? You know, is it a man woman thing, or is it just our own desire for sort of control and to have things work out, and so we own all of it? Instead of having faith and believing that God can do things beyond what we can see, like, is it just that? I'm not exactly sure where it all comes from, but I know that I experience it.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, John, just make sure you interrupt because I got all sorts of ideas and questions. So, okay.
Yeah.
I don't want to dominate. Anyway, so... Okay, so you realized, as you told us from in that particular moment, I'm sure there were others, that you weren't able to dream freely like she was able, and you couldn't enter into her dream because it was also bringing up fears. So
right.
So let me just jump over here for a minute, and then I want to go back to the fear side. So let me just ask you, when you started to be able to just dream, let your heart go, in the realm of desire, vision, passion, that kind of thing, what first came up for you personally? What's part of your dream that you know of now?
Oh, gosh. I touched on it a little bit. When in that particular moment, the first thing that came up is I thought, I don't know how to do this, but I know some of the things that I kind of like to do, and I decided if I'm going to dream, I'm just going to start throwing things out there. Like, I like this. What if? That kind of that question of like, what if? What if I were to have a friend and we started doing photography? Or what if we? And it was that kind of idea because I didn't really know like what I wanted to dream. But I knew that you know, you have to start throwing things up to kind of, you know, get yourself thinking and opening up. And so the more I started just throwing a few things up that maybe were, you know, I had some elements of things that I like, but as, you know, like over the years now, as I've sort of processed it, it's like, well, I don't really think I'd want to do that. But some of the things, the more I did it, the more I got free to just let these ideas go. And some of the things, like I'd mentioned it as I was talking about it, was speaking, writing, communicating, all those words that I want to impart something to somebody else. I want to see them get it. I want to see them free because they've heard something, they've seen something in a different way. And that is like core to who I am. Now, how I tie that back to, you know, like something like tangible, you know, like, I mean, I haven't tied it back to a career or anything like that, but it's, but like I said before that we were just starting this call, I said, I'm trying to learn to say yes to as many things that line up with that as possible. And that's right now how I'm seeing my dream come to life.
Mark,
does that answer the question?
Go ahead, John.
I was just thinking, does it help to go forward in your life and think of yourself lying on your deathbed and say, now looking back, what do you want to see? Does that bring any different perspective in it?
It's funny that you mentioned that because I've even written about this a little bit. I think that the idea of asking, let's say I go a year from now, not even to your deathbed, but just a year from now, what's the story you want to tell a year from now? Like, what do you want it to be said? And I tell my wife this, and she's like, I don't want to manufacture a story. I don't want to live my life just for a story, because she's not, you know, thinking about it like in a transcendent sense, I think. You know, she's thinking, like, let's just see what happens. But I think for me it's super helpful to think, like, what do I want to say? Like, I drove back from Colorado with Jerry Comfort instead of taking a plane because I felt like that's what God wanted me to do. And it was because it was an adventure. It was like, what's the story I want to tell when I get back? I don't want to tell a story of fear. I don't want to tell a story of, like, I was afraid to do it. It was going to be hard. And, like, no, man, let's do this thing. And it was awesome. So for me, that is helpful, John, to think back. I don't know if I think deathbed-wise because that just seems so far down the road, but I do think, like, a year from now, 2 years from now, what's the story I want to be able to tell about my life? And that's super helpful.
I love that. I love that, just going forward 1 year and then say, turn around and look back. That's really helpful to me.
Yeah, I mean, it helps with not, I mean, like, dreaming, but in a lot of ways. I mean, do I want to respond to this person that way? Do I want to leave it just like that? Is the story I want to tell a year from now that, you know, that happened, or I was a butthead with, you know, when this happened because I didn't want to, I don't know. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a little easier to only go a year out. Makes it a little bit more tangible, I think.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know if Mark, you've seen, Yvette made a comment here about how she said that her husband always rained on her dream parade. And so I think there is something with us men that, you know, I was just saying to her, and I do think it's true, because I've really wondered about why I have a hard time dreaming, having a vision. And that's kind of part of what we talk about with calling, but I don't know if it's just because what I struggle with as a man is this idea of, you know, one, I feel responsible to pull off my life and my wife's life and then my kids' life, which I realize there's something wrong in that theology, you know, and then wrestling with the question of, you know, do I have what it takes to do any of this? So it
feels
like one more straw that makes it all tumble over, I think, is what happens internally to me. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I agree. And in fact, as you were saying that, I'm thinking all of this, if it is a man-woman thing, which, like I said, I'm not sure it totally is, but I think the idea is anywhere where we feel like we're not sure, we feel like we have to kind of come through, that it's really up to us, because a lot of this stuff falls back to my lack of fathering, my inability to just let people be who they are around me. You know, it's like instead of having to have them be a certain way, or I feel uncomfortable, or so much of this is tied in, I think, to our stories, you know, and what we feel like we have to own. But I do wonder if this isn't part of the reason why this is so important, that if we could dream, if we could let people around us dream, and not have to hold the burden of making it happen. I mean, doesn't that even sound freeing just to think of that? To me, it's like, this thought comes to me where it's like, I have teenagers, and most of them are grown now, but I have one left. But they would tell me their dreams. Like, oh, this is what I want to do. And you know how kids are. Like, they have tons of dreams. You know, maybe they'll come to pass, maybe they won't. But because I was looking at them so literally, I would break them down and say, well, I don't know how you're going to do that, or you're going to need this kind of school or whatever. And my wife said something to me one time. She said, life has a way of like squashing people's dreams, or, you know, like, just it's hard. Some things are hard, and some things, you know, direct you because you try them. Let's let life make that decision. Let's do everything we can to point them in the right direction. We don't need to kill their dreams. Let's let, you know, just life, and she didn't mean it in a negative way. She just means it's like, you know, if you go, you're faced with, you know, I want to start a 10-acre farm and you just can't buy the land. Well, life has, you know, made it like, we're okay, maybe I don't need 10 acres then. But I don't need to kill the dream. And so as I think about this whole thing, it's like, gosh, this is important. Because what if we just let people dream and we didn't have to own the responsibility of making it come to pass? Can you imagine how free we'd be to dream? And if all of us said, hey, honey, what's your dream? I mean, if we made that an assignment for everybody and said, just go home and ask your wife, like, what are your dreams? You know, and then just let her dream, ask her questions about it so that, you know, more and more comes out without having to be the one to make it happen. So at the end of it, you can just go, man, I hope that happens for you. I hope somehow that happens with complete freedom.
Right.
I would love to be able to do that. I need to do that.
Well, and, you know, as you say that, I know for me, I don't want to necessarily make this a femininity, masculinity thing, though I think there is some differences. Larry Crabb says that a man's greatest fear is to have a weightless life, something that has no effect. A woman's greatest fear, he says, is to be invisible, you know, unseen in every way. Now, if that's true or not, here is a thing that hits me as you say that, Mark, and that is, you know, when Lee talks about a dream or something she envisions or would love, I do feel the responsibility to make it happen, and that just about crushes me because I feel like I'm always on the brink of being crushed by responsibility, making it happen. But, you know, it really kind of comes down to my personal theology. I mean, this is a huge error, thinking I've got to pull off my life, basically, and do it hopefully in a way that doesn't, you know, embarrass the name of Jesus, you know. So I do think that part of my fear is that I can't pull this off as it is, so please don't give me more to think about, and I'm not willing to add any more to that pile as well. So, and that's just a bad place to be. Therefore, you know, your scripture you started with and your talk about, I forgot the version you use, and I think you even paraphrased yourself about people without a vision, right? They wander, they're lost, they're...
Yeah, it's Proverbs 29:18. I probably got it out of like New American Standard, but then I put my own paraphrase to it.
can you remember, or do you have that in front of you? How you?
Yeah, I have it in front of me. Yeah,
read
Proverbs 29:18 says, "Where there is no vision, the people live unrestrained, but happy is he who keeps the law." And so I thought it's not too far off of that to say, that where there are no more dreams, people will live scattered lives, because that's what unrestrained means. It's they just have no focus, they have no vision, they have no direction, they just live scattered. So they'll wander. But those who live dream-filled lives, submitted to God, God-given even, they will be happy.
Yeah.
There is a quote from Donald Miller that kind of goes along. He says, we should stop reacting to life and start living with intention. And that statement, reacting to life as opposed to living with intention, that kind of goes along with people living scattered lives. And I can identify with that, just kind of taking every day and just really not going in the direction of where my real heart's desire wants to take me, but just simply responding to every day as it comes up.
Right.
So, Mark, let me ask you. You talked about this idea that fear has a good purpose if we keep it in the realm that it should be in. And you talked about fear should be that tap on the shoulder. It makes us hesitate, think, look, be aware, alert, but not
right.
more than that, which it tends to do. So kind of talk more about that.
Yeah, I mean, as I was thinking through, you know, like, what is fear's purpose? Like, because as I identify these things, it's obvious that, you know, some of these issues for me are fear. I mean, I have a lot of things where it's just like fear really stomps on stuff or gets in the way. And as I thought about it, I thought, really, fear is supposed to just be that supporting role, right? It's like you said, it's the tap on the shoulder that says, hey, something's not right, or something's a little scary, or something doesn't feel quite right, or whatever it is. And it's just supposed to be that pause that says, create a minute, you know, however long you need, create some space so that you can make a decision. So from that perspective, it's like, it's really good. It helps focus you. It helps you pause. It wants to create space so that you can think. That's really good. There's like a really positive part to fear. But the problem is that we begin to make fear like the main player, you know, like it's supposed to be the supporting role, but fear ends up being like the pathway. So instead of just pausing, making our decision and thinking like, you know, I've assessed everything, we're good, and moving forward, moving through fear, we make it all about the fear. And so we get caught in that. It's like, you know, like when you used to swim at the ocean, and if you get caught right in the middle where the waves are breaking, it's like, you know, the wave hits you, knocks you down, and pulls you out a little bit just in time for the next wave to crush right on top of you.
Mm-hmm.
And the only way to get out of it is either completely get out of the water, you know, and there's usually an undertow. So fear wants to suck you back into the ocean and pound you with more waves, but you got to get completely out. So you either check out for life, you know, like I'm not doing anything because I'm just too afraid. I don't want to get pounded by the waves anymore. Or you got to go into the deeper water. You got to swim beyond the breakers. That's the only two choices you have. Because if you stay in the middle, you're going to get killed. And that's where a lot of people lose heart. They get killed. They stay in that. They walk in it. They think that's where they should be playing. And it's not. It's a horrible place to be. So you got to go, you know, one way or the other. And I, you know, say swim out past the breakers, man. That's where it's good. That's where life gets calm again. So yeah, there's a real plus side to fear, but there's a real bad side to fear, and that's the distinction I was trying to make.
I really like the analogy, the metaphor. It should be just a tap on the shoulder. And as I thought about that in my life, hearing you and then our small group time, I thought, you know, I've had the tap on the shoulder of fear, which just makes me more alert. It's kind of saying, wait a minute, maybe you need to look at a few more things, look around a little more before you do this, decide this, say this, whatever it is, which is usually good. But what fear often feels like for me is that hand in the back, which pushes me in a direction, not the tap on a shoulder, but a hand in the back. And I don't mean, you know, that hand when someone forcefully is basically saying, I'm going to show you where to go. I'm going to push you in a direction. And I, you know, I'm tired of living a life like that, of being pushed, you know, either away from something or to something. You know, as Vern said in here, he said, fear is as good as long as you don't center your life on it.
Right.
And then he said, fear is to be your gas gauge, not your GPS, which is true.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and Michael, you probably saw this, but I'll say it's for the sake of The Secret Garden too. Michael Kimball had a great comment here. He said, Sheila and I have spent a lot of our married life pursuing our dreams and have gotten pretty banged up along the way. But I can't help but believe that the banging is meant to forge the dream, to temper it into a hardened, persevering point. That's good, because you know what? As I think about that, Michael, any dream, vision, idea from God that I've ever had, or Lee's had, or we've had together, it's never worked smoothly. It's always been, eventually, we've run into opposition, assault, oppression, hardship, That's just a good point.
Yeah, any step, I firmly believe this, any step you take toward God, toward something beautiful, toward something good, especially when it involves your life and your dreams and your purpose, it will be opposed. I mean, somehow it will be opposed. I mean, I am like number one to be like totally shocked by it. Like, really? They said that?
Right.
Or they? I mean, so I'm always caught off guard. My wife's always like, "You're so naive." It's like, well, I just want to believe that it doesn't ever happen, but it does happen. And so, but the other thing I was thinking that Michael's quote made me think about, and we talked about this a little bit. I just touched on it really quick in the when I was talking at base care at the gathering was the idea that sometimes we need to look at our dreams, because if we view our dream as like, it has to be this way, and it has to be, this is like a plan, like, oh, I have a dream now, and this is it. This is it for my whole life. That everything has to revolve around my dream. That can be sort of a dangerous place if we put, you know, like all the eggs in that basket. Because what I think is that, I shared a little bit about my friend who had a dream to go and, you know, spend 6 months in Canada learning how to do survival, you know, wilderness survival. And I'm thinking like, oh my gosh, like this guy's got kids and a wife, and how's he going to do this thing? And as we unpacked that whole thing, and sometimes it can happen when you're sharing it, but I think it's probably better, you know, if it grows a little bit before you start analyzing all your dreams to death. But it was like, really, it was a metaphor for something different. I mean, Gary, you talk about these things when we do our picture exercises and a lot of these things. There's so many metaphors, so many things like in the words that move us, in the type of jobs, you know, the dreams that we have are pictures of a life that we might envision ourselves living. And so it could be literal, like, you know, like my example of like, yeah, go be a photographer, you know, in Colorado and hang off the side of cliffs and take pictures. That could be true, literally. Or what I've found for me was that as I've moved toward that kind of a dream, like, oh, I'm going to start taking more photos and see if this is something that really is a dream. So it was experimental in a sense. And what I found is that that was really more of a metaphor for some of the things that are really true about me, the way I see life, the way I want to see things, the way I want to impart things and show things to people, like a photographer might do. But it wasn't photography that I want. So I do think that as we're dreaming, that if we can think of them that way as sort of not the end-all, be-all, but maybe even experiment a little as we step toward our dreams and then look for the bigger picture. You know, as we get, you know, one thing lights up and maybe we'll see something else, we turn that corner and it illuminates something else that's truer about us. And we just keep following that along the way, you know, as we journey through life.
Mm-hmm. So let me make this really personal to you.
Okay.
So where are you at? I mean, you gave me something earlier, but where are you at in your own life and calling about having a vision for your life? And I think we have visions for the, you know, not only for our marriage, for our family, but I think we have one for what we come to understand as the effect of our life, the compelling that we've finally discovered about our life. Where are you at with that? And how do you think you can, find more clarity, develop it, understand it more?
Yeah, that's a good question. I have wrestled with that question for a long time. And honestly, you know, as I've thought about it more recently, I thought, boy, I'm glad I didn't do this, or this, because I would have hurt people or it wouldn't have been good because I wasn't ready for it. So this sort of process of, you know, God helping me discover things and, you know, has been really good for me along the way. I feel like I'm getting, I don't know, like my calling statement, my manifesto, you know, my knowing who I am and what I want to do is getting more refined. I mean, like I was saying earlier, you know, the idea of wanting to impart something, wanting to help people get it, that whole side of me is I'm finding is truer and truer. I took a I took a challenge from a friend sort of hesitantly to take a year without really talking. I mean, I talked verbally, but it's like, you know, without like having a voice, without having to give my opinion, you know, that kind of stuff. And what I found is that over the course of that year, the things that really, really were true of me, like where I really desperately wanted to give something but didn't, or, you know, so I took lots of notes and I put things, you know, like not publicly but privately. And it really helped me see that, like, this is really true of me, to see things, to see life in a certain way, to observe, provide feedback, to ask questions. So you asked about refining it and developing it. Part of what I see with that sort of idea, it means I have to learn to ask questions. I'm horrible at asking questions. And so, like, over the last couple of years, I've been intentionally trying to learn more about stopping to ask questions so that I'm not just giving my opinion all the time, but it's to draw things out and ask more questions. So that's one way I feel like I'm trying to refine and develop in my, you know, my calling, what I offer the world.
Yeah.
So I know I didn't have like a specific thing, you know, like, oh, I'm going to go do this, this, and this, and write a book and do all these. So I'm not quite to there yet.
Yeah. John, go ahead. You have something, it sounds like. I heard you do that cough like I've got an idea.
No, I'm really clearing my voice. But, you know, just thinking back through this whole conversation, one of the things I keep thinking is, and I was going to ask both of you guys, do you feel like you dreamed more when you were young than you do now?
And, John, when you say that, do you mean have a dream? Like, not like have like a prophetic dream while you're in bed at night and you wake up and you realize, but you mean like have dreams of your future, your life? Is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. What do you think? How's that look like in your life?
Well, I just identified with what Michael said about he and Sheila and how they pursued their dreams, but it was just they were being battered, you know, banged up along the way. And I think a lot of my current problem with being able to dream towards the future is I've had so many dreams that have gone unfulfilled, and it's kind of like I even wrote this in my journal a month or two ago. Is this just a setup for another disappointment? You know, to try to write out what do you envision for the rest of your life? And I thought there is a seed of cynicism there that has come from just life coming at you. And I think as a younger man, I dreamed all kinds of things. Lately, I don't dream much of anything. And I'm wondering if it's just because having gone through so much of disappointment and shattered dreams and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I wonder that too. I wonder if it's just that because we've dreamed and haven't seen them fulfilled, or we've dreamed and they didn't fulfill us the way we thought it would when we got there. Just why I was trying to give a little bit of, not to temper anyone's dream, but just to say, like, don't make it everything. You know, it's just, it's a lighthouse that you sail toward, you know. But I think Gary has helped me super with this idea that, you know, even our calling, even the things that we offer, that these things are always unfolding. You know, it's the spiral staircase up, you know, that we're always seeing new things. I do wonder if it's just the disappointments we've had along the way or how we interpret those disappointments that cause us to stop dreaming.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think, you know, to answer your question, I think when I was, you know, personally for me, I really enjoy developing something, making it happen. That is fun for me. And for instance, but Lee, she's like a dream machine. She has ideas. I mean, she could give me five ideas every day of some amazing ways to, you know, for this ministry to fulfill its mission or whatever. She just, And I'm not like that. She loves the dreaming part. I don't think she enjoys the doing part as much. I love the doing part. Now, whether that comes out of a good place or not,
right,
not a good place, I'm not sure. But I do think that when I was younger, I think I probably had more dreams, ideas, visions, wants for my future life. And I do feel the pull, as I've read from so many other people that have written on this, I do feel the pull of, or the idea of pulling in as I get older, kind of just to safeguard myself and thinking, I don't think
right.
I can do this anymore. And I don't know if I can trust the future. And that's just
right.
a really unhealthy place to be spiritually and emotionally
yeah.
and relationally. But I feel the pull of it now. I think in my younger years, I had my greater danger was maybe, you know, arrogance and kind of living a godless life. And now I feel like it's more fear and apprehension and pulling in, which is godless as well.
Right.
Anyway,
yeah. Yeah, it's tough. So, I think, you know, like, you can tell people your dreams, but you have to own your dream. Not everybody will own it. And when you're young, I think you're just shooting a bunch of stuff out there. I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And, you know, people, when you're a teenager, you know, I never felt the burden to help anybody else fulfill a dream. Right? I mean, you just listen. Like, oh, cool. You want to be a Navy fighter pilot? Great. You know, you're going to have to go to school, but go ahead. You know, I didn't have to make it happen. As I get older, I think I feel more ownership or more responsibility somehow to make it happen. But I also notice that I have to own my dream, that, like, I'm excited about it, and I tell this other person, and they're like, oh, okay, well, they're not that excited about it. So then I question my dream. Is it really, you know, like, if I'm not going to have any support to help me with my dream, can I pull it off? And so I think all that does change over time. It just makes me think all the more that we really need to be there for each other, if not to help people fulfill their dream, to just let them be excited about their dream. You know,
that is
we have so little of that.
Go ahead, John.
Yeah, that is such a good point. I'm going to quote you, Mark. This is in your email that you sent me. But you say, when we embrace our dreams, we give, in other words, giving rise to our desires and passions, we're embracing the call of God on our lives. And I think it's so easy to not to disembrace that call by just saying, well, I don't want to take the risk of being disappointed again. And we need each other just to say, hey, those dreams are real. They're coming from a very genuine place. They may not be exactly the place God's taking you, but they are close. They're a clue. So don't let go. Embrace them and keep pursuing, keep desiring.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good.
You know, and just let me throw out a final thought from me, and then I'd like you guys to do the same for yourselves on this as we wrap up here. I really think that we need others to help us, you know, be freer with our hopes for the future, our dreams, to make them bigger than they probably are, to help us push through, you know, the ever expanding, you know, fears that we have out there. We overcome one, but there's another wall of fear waiting that we're going to walk up to. Just for somebody, but someone who you can trust with your heart, like you brought up, Mark, when some people are like, yeah, whatever. Of course, that's what I've done to my wife, so I deserve it back on me. So,
yeah.
But, you know, someone who can just keep asking questions and keep pushing a little further. So play that a little farther. And what if you had, you know, whatever, and just, I think, just to help hope become larger. You know, I think a lot of it's just hope, you know, just the hope of what our life could be, and then something I can ask God for versus can you help us please make it another month financially, or can you, you know, whatever that is.
Right.
So I just think we really need someone else who we can trust our heart to, and who understands the importance of dream, vision, ideas, desires for our future and help us work that out. And then we do that for the other person, because at some point you can only have people push you hard, and you need to take a rest. So the best way to take a rest is you do it with them for a while.
Right.
So I find that's important for me. So John, final thought for you, and then Mark from you as well. So John?
I think final thought for me actually comes out of what Randy Luce just said. He says, without knowing ourselves, dreaming can be very misaligned and can be confused with evil or impure motives. And just thinking back on how so many of my dreams did end up in disappointment, I think a lot of that is just God hammering out some of the selfish, fleshly toxins of my dreams, so as to purify them, so that what came from my heart is what's still there. And so I think that's been a lot of the struggle with my dreams, is just God taking me through situations to purify those desires that are coming straight from my heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I guess for me, final thought is just, I don't want to make it like, I have to say the same thing as you, Gary, but I so echo what both you and John are saying, in that it takes other people in our lives. I mean, like Randy was saying, like, if you have these dreams and they can become, you know, like not good things, it can have some impure parts of it, or we can just misunderstand. I knew a guy who wanted to be a professional deer hunter, because he just loved hunting. And so I would talk to him about that. And in the end, that whole idea of sort of unpacking things, trying to see metaphorically into people's lives, I started looking, I know the guy's story. And so I'm like, you know what? I see you doing this. And I see, what is it about that you love? Well, I love this. And I love preparing. And I love, you know, all this stuff that goes along with it. And in the end, what we ended up with was saying, I don't think you want to be a professional deer hunter. Maybe you do. You know, it's fine. But what I'm hearing in your story is that you love to develop things. You love to help people figure things out and bring people along. And there's so many deeper aspects to his dream that he even realized. That, you know, it wasn't about literally becoming professional deer hunter. It was about all the stuff that surrounded it. And maybe had he pursued that dream, he would have found that wasn't what he wanted, you know, ultimately, if he'd have made it all about that. But by having me in his life, by having, you know, people that are willing to sort of look and unpack, know your story, think bigger than maybe your dream itself, I think can be huge. Can be huge.
Right. And with that, I think, like, I want people around me that will encourage me to dream, talk out loud, you know, kind of push these ideas out to their limits to see where they go, but also be kind of, you know, with me going, okay, now, Gary, as you think about your life and the value of life and the values of the kingdom, what is it at the end that you're going to be most proud of? You're going to say, that's what I wanted my life to be about. So that it kind of pulls it back to, maybe as Randy was talking about, pulls it away from this self-centered, selfish, narcissistic life of, this is my dream because I would be so happy, to, you know, what is it you really want your life to be about? That you would say, that's it. That's what I was hoping for from my life. And that takes special skills, special friends, I think, who can let you, you know, can let you kind of push the boundaries of your dream out, but then help you kind of bring it to, but what is it you want most of your life, and how does that play into what you just shared? I know for me, again, I just, the world, John and I were talking about this earlier, the world has its own language of dreams, and it's typically about what would make me most happy. That's my dream.
Right.
In fact, real quickly, so Sam and I, we stayed in a hotel on Thursday night after he picked me up at Midway Airport in Chicago, and we stayed kind of near there just because it was already late at night. And as we went to the counter, we got a room, and then Sam said, now, that room, like, has two two queen beds, right? And she goes, no, it has one. And I'm standing right next to Sam, and he says, we want two beds. That would not be good for us. And she goes, I'm not judging. And so I said, yeah, that's not something we would like. And she goes, you know what? Whatever makes you happy is good. And as we were talking, Sam kind of talked about, you know, she started talking about, you know, happiness is what God wants the most. And it went really to this whole thing that, you know, your dream, what God wants you to do is have a dream for your life that makes you happy. And we tried to play it out with her, you know. But all that to say is, yes, I don't want to live in the world's definition of a dream, but in God's definition of a dream. And I think I need friends to help me do that.
Yeah, I agree.
So, everyone, this was sure good. This was a great conversation. Mark, thank you for doing this. I know it was last minute. So thank you for joining us on this.
Thanks for having me do it.
To as many things as, you know, you feel like your life is about, and saying yes to this one. So thank you.
Thanks.
Yep. John, fun doing this with you. And everyone, we should be back with you next Thursday, and I'll let you know next week what we'll be talking about. All right, everybody. Good night. Thanks for joining us. See ya.
Good night.
Bye.